Hi there, welcome to Sauce Unbound. I'm your host, Nadana, Head of Growth at Sauce Group, serial acquirer buying wonderful SaaS businesses to take them to the next level. And here I chat with inspiring founders and experts to get the inside scoop on how they made their business success. And today with me is Osman, co-founder and CEO at User Guiding, a no-code product adoption tool. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Anna. Thank you so much for having me.
Sure. And well, a recent marathon finisher. So just to throw it out there. Yeah. Good that you're back and alive and not hurting and doing this.
One
Thank
piece.
you. In one piece. Yeah. But yeah, I think a lot of people who will be listening to this one will know who you are. You're fairly prominent on LinkedIn. I think your last post was how you generated like 1.5 million impressions on LinkedIn. So people should know.
In the past 12 months, as far as I remember, there were almost 400,000 people that my post reached, unique people, and the impression was around 1.3 million. Yeah, I will continue to invest on my LinkedIn.
Okay, all right. And hopefully you'll share some tips and hacks how to do it properly. But before we get there, for those who don't know LinkedIn, can we get into your background a little bit?
As you said, I'm the co-founder and CEO of User Guiding. I was born and raised in Turkey. I moved to London last year. During my university years, actually, I was working for an angel investment network in Turkey. There, I have reviewed more than 3,000 business plans and interviewed with 600 entrepreneurs. It was a great learning experience for me. Then we started the venture studio. Then we moved to San Francisco and started building User Guiding there.
Okay. I mean, San Francisco is the startup capital of the world. What and it's sunny. Why did you move to London?
Absolutely. I'm also asking the questions every day, especially during winter season. Yeah, we spent almost 2 years in San Francisco. Then pandemic boomed. Yeah, we had to go back to Turkey and raise some capital, and we built our team in Turkey. There are 11 hours time difference between Turkey and San Francisco. It's okay for a few months, but after some quarters, it became a real challenge for us. That's why we decided to stay in Turkey more. And last year, UK is the biggest market in Europe. It's the third biggest market for User Guiding after US and Brazil. And last year, we decided to move to London. It's only 2 3 hours time difference between Turkey. It's much more manageable for us, and it's also much closer to our client base.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, in small teams, you probably do struggle a little bit if you're remote with those time differences. I mean, it's a little bit easier maybe for us because we have bigger teams. But yeah, I can get the idea. All right. Well, tell me more about User Guiding. Like, how did you start it, and like, why this particular tool? Because usually there is either I'm solving a problem for myself, or this is kind of my background, and I know it can be better. What's your deal?
During our venture studio years, we were helping entrepreneurs to build their first web applications. We also helped them to acquiring their first clients. Onboarding was a common problem that we couldn't solve easily. There are some tools, but most of them are not performing very well. The well-performing wells were too expensive. Honestly, we were not aware how big the problem is until we arrived San Francisco. Venture still was fun, but the business model was a service business model and it was not scalable at all. It creates a heavy maintenance burden on our shoulders. Then we decided to sell a few projects and we didn't get some new projects for our agency. Then we decided to move to San Francisco. Then we noticed that whenever we met some product people, onboarding is a huge problem for those people as well. Then we checked out all the products on the market, and we decided to build a robust, easy to use, affordable user onboarding tool for SMEs and startups. With the one sentence, your guiding is a product adoption tool. We help other web applications to improve their conversion retention metrics. We also help them to decrease their customer support workload.
It's good that you mentioned, you know, robust but easy to use. So how did you know, you know, what features to build? Because I had a conversation here with the founder who basically said, hey, we like the entry barrier into SaaS is so much easier now. And to reach kind of like the feature parity with bigger players is fairly easy. So how were you building user guiding? Did you look at what your competitors were having and what worked and what made the tool kind of solve the problem, but still, you know, keep on being easy and intuitive? Or did you like go with your gut? What was your...
Yeah, it's a great question. As I already said, we were working with many, many startup people, many entrepreneurs before we start user guiding. And I think we have 22, 23 interviews before we start designing the tool, before we start writing the first code. And yeah, I remember we use almost all the free trials, and maybe we spent a few hundred dollars to take a look at our competitors' products. That was a great base for us because we were not the first mover in the market. And yeah, honestly, there are some cool products at the market. It was a base for us, and that was also our first B2B SaaS that we built for ourselves. But we already know how to design an MVP. We already know actually how to first version of product. That also helped us a lot to create the first version of user guiding. Our previous team from Venture Studio were also with us. We are still together with Alijan, and there are some other people. We have been working for almost 10 years. That was also super helpful for us to start building the first version of user guiding.
Okay. All right. That's a fascinating story. So, you know, this is not your first venture, but like you said, it's your first B2B. And I'm just curious if it made any difference for you in your founder mindset, and were there any common mistakes that you fell into when you were starting this?
Yeah, actually, last year I shared a very short series on LinkedIn. The name was The Traps First-Time Founders Love to Fall Into. And I got a good impression, actually. I got a more than 60K impression from only three posts. The first one is the first trap that first-time founders love to fall into, including myself. It was, ideas are worthless, execution is everything. I know it sounds catchy, it's a very fancy words, but I believe only well-executed good ideas can produce some amazing results. Otherwise, yeah, nobody can create amazing stuff out of a very bad idea. The second trap is listen to everybody, especially for first-time founders, early-stage founders. Getting high-quality and actionable advice are crucial. But getting some wrong advice from wrong people is much more dangerous than moving forward with no advice at all. The last one, it was the most tricky to avoid. The more features, the better. Building, releasing, launching some new features are always exciting. But most of the time, that's your clients, your potential customers are not looking for some new features. They look for some real problems to solve. That's why first-time founders should focus on what they will deliver, what kind of problems solve their clients. Basically, it's just understanding customers' needs, not the feature factory. It's not a great thing to start.
Yeah, early stage B2B SaaS 101. Don't listen to anybody. But I think, it's really interesting what you said, but I think it's even worse when you get bad advice from people you look up to and take as gurus in the space, because then you're really torn. Like, okay, they're supposed to know their stuff, and like, I'm supposed to follow. So I think there is a very good balance that founders need to strike for. Well, you
Definitely.
mentioned it again, and I have to ask, because again, also a very, very big thing, founder brand, and obviously we will be talking about LinkedIn, but founders build brand where their customers are. So like, it can be Instagram, it can be Facebook. So don't fall into another trap for founders and start building your brand on LinkedIn if it doesn't make sense. But it does for you. So how are you doing it? What do you think helped you get those impressions and get to those people and get the deals from LinkedIn too?
Yeah, the first is regarding is a B2B platform. I think, yeah. And LinkedIn is the gold mine for some people who targeting B2B companies. The first advice that I can give, be consistent. Back in the days, I was sharing some stuff once a week, some months, once a month. I was afraid I will not find anything to share if I share 2 times, 3 times a week. But the reality is the opposite. When you started to share constantly, your brain starts finding some new ideas. I'm always taking some notes. Early mornings, when I am running and I am watching something totally different, and I'm saying, okay, yeah, I can talk about it actually. I can say something about these topics. The first one is the consistent. The second one, it's hard to say for me actually, but I see there are a lot of generated content over there, because especially with ChatGPT and other LLM models, you can create, I don't know, 10 posts a day. Actually, it only costs $19 a month for you, but it's worthless. I really care what I'm gonna share, what kind of topics that I really want to share and create some value for people. The last one, I was thinking too much, and I have some, have to say, I have some concerns if what people thinks, what people create some critics about my post. I also cancel this noise as well, especially in the last 12 months. I say, okay, this is my idea. And I'm not pushing everybody to believe me. And I also post some controversial stuff. Let's say, listen to everybody or ideas are worthless. I can give these examples. Don't overthink is also very important to share more frequently, more bravely, I can say that.
Yeah, that's a good advice. I think like just being genuine and like true to yourself. I really liked how one of my guests said, we're building businesses, we're not following a religion, and we can make mistakes, and we can talk about this being relevant this year and that being relevant this year. And it's totally normal to be agile and to be versatile. And if you don't like that, well, it's just something that I want to share. So thank you. Thank you for sharing your story. I wanted to also ask you about the fact that you raised money eventually, not a huge amount, but you only raised when you made it work, when you started to learn how to manage your cash flow. And I think you were profitable at that time as well. So why did you decide to raise? And also, how do you manage the investment with that bootstrapper mindset? And managing it after being very frugal and having a budget and having the rules to operate it, how did you approach it?
Yeah, we were not profitable when we raised money. After we raised money, we became profitable. The first round was 5 years ago. It was only 200K as a pre-seed investment. And after 1 year, we raised $1 million from the same investors. Our lead investors is Collective Spark. It is one of the best VCs in Turkey. Then we overhyped and we noticed that actually raising money or hiring more people or throwing money at problems is not a real growth experiment. Then, unfortunately, we have to make some layoffs. It was one of the most difficult decisions in my life, but we have to do that. Then we noticed that, raising money, hiring more and more people, raising money. Actually, the VC game is not the best fit for us, even though we have such a good relationship with investors, still. Then we decided to follow a more sustainable growth strategy. It fit us for the last almost 4.5 years. We have not raised any money and we are still growing at a good pace. We are burning some cash, but that's totally fine. That's under our control. We call it late strapping, not bootstrapping, not raising money every year. I hope late strapping will be a term in a few years. That's our fundraising history.
I think it's catching up. A lot of founders are late strapping now. I've had a few stories here on the
Ah,
podcast.
cool.
And yeah, I think there were quite a few realizations that, throwing money at problems and, like you said, hiring too many people at once, maybe not the best strategy. But you learned, you readjusted. So, what are the rules now to successful late strapping?
Late strapping.
Yes, I'm catching up. What are the rules like? Maybe you're hiring slower, or you're not doing certain types of marketing, or is there anything that you do now?
Actually, we didn't over-engineer these cash flow projections and budget planning so much at User Guiding. We have some annual budgets that we create in the last quarter of a year, and we have some quarterly checkups. But if you are profitable and if you have 9, 10 months runway, you can freely spend some money from the previous month at growth, because throwing money at the problems are not solving the problems, but keeping the whole money at the bank also doesn't help you to solve all the problems in the world. But if you are burning some money, you have to be much more cautious. You have to be stick with your plans, with hiring plans, marketing and sales expenses, and some other expenses, consultants expenses. You have to be much more careful about it. If you are bootstrapping or late strapping like us, there's no huge investor push as well. Like you raise some 20, 50, $100 million from some very aggressive investors that also help you to find some sustainable functioning growth strategy, because actually how many thousand dollars you are going to collect next quarter, most probably 90%, 80% of chance. And you know how many dollars at the bank, you know your expenses. It is not, we didn't over-engineer it at, as I said before.
Okay. All right. Can you, because you just mentioned it, right, about sustainable growth strategies, and everyone wants to find one that works for them. Can you maybe tell me a little bit of like what you're experimenting with and what works for you guys?
Inbound marketing has been the main growth channel for User Guiding. Right now, there are more than 1,000 unique blog posts in our blog. For Portuguese, we have 600, I guess, translated version of our most performing articles. It's a good fit for us because there's no millions of dollars at the bank to spend on Google, spend on other online paid platforms. For the last year, actually, we also started to have some outbound marketing. It is tougher than I guess, but we also started to get good traction on Outbound. It is our third trial. The first two didn't work at all. We also spent some money at online platforms, mostly in Google Ads. These are the growth channels for user guiding for now.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. How did you add outbound to your already existing and working inbound strategy? Everyone's talking about the fact that it should be probably founder-led at first, and the founder should be the one kind of figuring out how the sales motion is going to look like. So, how did you do? Did you hire a sales team? Did you go with a consultancy? What was the process there?
This episode is sponsored by Rewardful. Looking for new ways to find customers for your SaaS business? Consider building an affiliate program. Rewardful is the easiest affiliate tracking platform to set up, manage, and scale for SaaS companies. Building a successful affiliate program can be a little bit intimidating at first, and that's why Rewardful has taken what they've observed from their most successful customers' affiliate programs and distilled that into an exclusive online course. The exciting part? Their affiliate marketing course is absolutely free. Start the course at academy.rewardful.com. Academy.rewardful.com. And turn your biggest fans into your best marketers.
Yeah, see, the first two experiments were led by myself, and both of the experiments failed. Last year, we hired some new teammates who had been there, done that before, and that was a great chance for us. 3 months ago, we hired our first head of sales. He has also some outbound experience. Most of the startup starts with outbound first, and without a strong inbound existence, having strong outbound existence is almost impossible. But we talk about a company who has been very active in the market for the last 7 years, having hundreds of thousands of unique visitors at its website. That also helped us to build a scalable outbound strategy. Yeah, we hired the right people. We already are good at inbound marketing. We gave enough importance this time at outbound. Yeah, that's why it started to work. We were just thinking, okay, we will send some emails and people will open and click it. Oh my God, that's awesome. Let's schedule a demo and take my money. I want to have the biggest plan, but that was not the case. We noticed that.
Yeah, rarely is. But well, you turned it into learning, turned it around. That's super cool. Another question that I wanted to ask you is, I noticed that you are in a couple of startup communities. You're in SaaS Talk, you have this Turkish Founder Club where you're always also present. And I was wondering, because, well, we often talk about the importance of the community and how entrepreneurship can just be a very lonely story. And there is a reason why people go to conferences and why everyone says that yes, speeches and like talks on stage are great, but we go there for networking and just to talk to people who are kind of like in the same industry at the same stage maybe. So tell me more about your involvement with the communities and what it gives to you.
Yeah, actually, I think every job has its own challenges. And yeah, I don't compare every job, but I'm pretty sure entrepreneurship is not a path to walk alone. There are so many ups and downs, there are so many surprises, and most of the time, they are not very nice surprises. That's why having some mentors, having some people facing similar challenges is crucial. And I also believe people are very eager to help. Maybe 9 out of 10 entrepreneurs are eager to support other entrepreneurs. Yeah, if you approach right, I have rarely seen you couldn't figure out to get the support you need. As you said, I'm proudly a member of SusDoc founder membership for the last 3 years. I'm doing my best to be active in my founder circles. Yeah, I try to attend all the events. We have some Ask Me Anything sessions. We have some off the record sessions. I attended 3 annual retreats, all of them actually. It gave me a chance to meet with other global B2B SaaS founders struggling with the same problems. It's not also giving the only meet. You went to an event and you shake 20 hands that you will never shake again. That's not the case in SaaS Talk, especially our annual retreats are amazing opportunities to build some meaningful relationship because you spent almost 3 nights and 3 days together. You have breakfast, lunch, dinners, you have some sessions, you have some round tables, you have some Ask Me Anything sessions. Yeah, it gives a great opportunity to build some long-lasting, friendly connections. It's not sending some cold emails, cold LinkedIn message on social media platforms. It's so helpful for us because we started to get some GTM strategies, find some team management, financial management, product development advice from others. I am a huge fan of peer learning and spending some time with similar people, similar mindset. People are amazing. And yeah, this year we also started the Turkish Founders Club. We will have 30 to 40 founders for our first batch. They will be around $1 to $10 million in ARR, very similar to SusDoc. And I hope we will be also able to touch people's life positively.
Okay, yeah, that makes great sense. I mean, I haven't had a chance to go to SusDoc, can you imagine, yet?
Oh my God, you must, yes, you must go, you I must
know.
Go.
I know, yes. Well, I'm praying to the visa gods that I get a next time and get to visit. But I've heard obviously amazing things about it. And yeah, like I said, it just meeting with people and something that I noticed lately at the last couple of conferences where I went. Yes, there are people still listening to the talks, but mostly people are just in halls listening to each other, you know, talking to each other. I think people want more of those round tables and getting closer together and really have the meaningful conversations.
Yeah. But I just wanted to add something. It is so important for myself. You can listen, I don't know, greatest mind. You can listen, I don't know, founder of Apple, Tesla, Microsoft. Actually, listening is very easy. But asking some questions and get some advice about your current situation is not easy. There are thousands of amazing podcasts over there. There are thousands of talks on internet. But you cannot ask some questions to podcast recordings, right? You cannot get some answers about your current struggles. Yeah, these kind of communities are actually giving this opportunity to you.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, I have a question about exactly what you're doing and the problem you're solving, right? Like you said, a lot of people are struggling with onboarding. And maybe you have some tip for the founders, like what to look at first. If onboarding is something that they want to do better, like where to look, where to start?
Yeah. They should open our emails first and schedule a demo and have the biggest user guiding plans. Yeah, the first thing, they try to have some objective look at their product. Since we spent hours, days, weeks on our product thing, it's very easy to use. It's very usable. Everybody in the world can use it, but whenever you start watching some session replays, you notice that, oh my God, is this guy blind or drunk tonight? Actually, why he's not clicking on the create button? Why he's asking how to create something? My first suggestion is to watch session replays. It is so powerful. It is so important for people. The second thing, most of the founders, especially the first time founders, think user onboarding, product adoption is a one-time job. They will create some interactive tools, they will create some beautiful onboarding flows, and it will work. That's not the case most of the time. You have to take a look again and again. You have to improve your onboarding flows at least every month. We suggest every week, but it also takes some time. You have to track your analytics, how people are reacting to your flows. You make some A/B tests, you make some improvements continuously. And the third one is onboarding is not a one thing that you can handle. You also have to land people on the right landing page. You have to position your product. You have to focus on messaging. Then right onboarding can help you. Sometimes, yeah, you overpromise so much on your landing page and your product actually doesn't deliver these promises. A good onboarding, honestly, does not help you too much. Onboarding starts when you started to promise something on your landing page. Otherwise, a good onboarding, it does not also solve your stuff. But if you are promising the right things that you can actually deliver, a good onboarding, a good product adoption will make your users feel, okay, yeah, the website says this, blah, 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 and yeah, with this flow, I got this value. If I invest more time, if I invest more energy and effort, yeah, I will get the other values as well. That's my advice to founders.
Awesome. So yeah, onboarding flow is not a magic bullet, but it can help if you look at everything holistically.
Absolutely.
Right. That makes sense. Okay. Well, I just have a couple of more questions for you. You have a wonderful journey. You have your LinkedIn brand. You have user guiding that is profitable and sustainable. In this journey, what do you think has been your biggest win and also the biggest failure, or maybe not a failure, but a mistake that you were able to turn out?
I think my biggest win is working with people I care about and who also care about me. It is one of the greatest privileges of being a founder. You don't have to see anyone every day that you don't want to see. I think it's a very, very big win for me, because when I was working for corporate world, I don't blame anybody, but it was very, very common. Sometimes you are surrounded by people you don't want to have dinners at all. Working with some people you care when you are working on something that you like. I think that's a very, very big win. When I think my biggest failure, I think it is the opposite of my biggest win. Especially at the early days of user guiding, we lost some very talented people because of lack of experience. If we wouldn't be the first-time founders, I think it would be done much better job to retain those people. That's my biggest failure and mistake, I think.
Okay. Well, you know, like you said, you learned from this mistake and now you're more cautious about hiring fast. All right. Well, then the last question is about a hack, and feel free to share another piece of knowledge for those struggling with onboarding, or it can be just something that works for you.
First of all, I don't believe there's one hack that every founder should take benefits out of it, but I have some suggestions that I would give to my younger self from 10 years ago. I have been in entrepreneurial life for 10 to 11 years. I will absolutely say to must win, you should survive. And to survive, you must stay calm. There will be a lot of moments that you said, okay, the game is over. It is the end of the world. But whenever you have some problems, there are a lot of great alternatives to solve these issues. Don't be too hard on yourself. Just enjoy the journey. Stay in the game, that I would say to my younger self.
Okay, that's a good one. It also qualifies as a hack, you know, something that we sometimes forget. Yes, it's so easy to sometimes just crawl into this hole and kind of be there and focus on the bad things. But, you know, what helps me, and I mean, I don't know what the entrepreneurs are going through, obviously, I've never been there, but that's maybe a reason why I ask for the win as well, is remembering the wins. So basically, keeping a little folder of everything that went right, and sometimes go into that light space in your head, or I don't know, keep it on your computer.
Absolutely. even for today, Anna, actually, I can count a 500 reasons that why user guiding will fail. There will be always hundreds, thousands of reasons that you will not make it out. But if you have only one reason that you think you can succeed, you can make it work, I think you just need to focus on the one thing. Otherwise, there will be always, we are living in a very struggling world, crisis, natural diseases, pandemics. Oh my God, nothing is going very good nowadays, actually. But you just need to focus on the only one reason that you will succeed.
Yeah, it's a marathon, not a sprint. So yeah,
I see what you say.
I know, right? Well, thank you so much for telling the story. I think there is a lot of resilience and a lot of learnings that you went through, and it's really fun to see everything that you show there on LinkedIn. And I know that it's probably just a very, very small part of what's going on with you and user guiding, but thanks for being open and honest and sometimes controversial. So yeah, it's very good to keep an eye on. So thanks for being here.
Awesome. Thank you for hosting me, Anna.
Thank you, and happy to do it again sometime. So thanks for your time.
Sure.
And take care.
That was yet another awesome conversation on SaaS Unbound. We're always looking for new guests to share their experiences. We mostly talk with bootstrapped SaaS founders, and if you're one, reach out to me directly at anna@saas.group or find me on LinkedIn. If you're not bootstrapped or even not SaaS but have a great story to tell, we want to hear from you too. And obviously, SaaS Unbound wouldn't be possible without the SaaS Group, a founder-friendly private equity company that buys awesome businesses that people love to take them to even greater success. If you're thinking about selling your company or just exploring your options, feel free to visit saas.group, fill in the form, and expect a response in under 24 hours.